This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, this is Jeff Russo. I'm the composer from Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and with me is Patrick Devlin. Pat, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. As of this recording, we thankfully found some time, thanks to Veterans Day. So,
yeah, well, ironically, the topic we're about to talk about, the event takes place in the building I was just working at, or the main event actually takes place in the building I was working at. This was a satellite spot, but yeah.
Yeah. And we will be talking about the New York Comic-Con Discovery panel. And listeners, we have had this on the books for a while, but because of work schedules and family, and we just couldn't get a time. So here we are. I know it's a little late, but for those of you who haven't watched it, we thought that the discussion would be good and to sort of give our two cents on how the panel went and what was important for the upcoming season.
Yep. Yeah. So, I guess that sums it up, huh?
Yeah. So, I'm just going to run down who was on the panel. So we have, in the order that they came out, Michelle Paradise. She is executive producer and co-showrunner. Heather Caden, executive producer. Alex Kurtzman, executive producer and co-showrunner. Sonequa Martin-Green, obviously Michael Burnham. Doug Jones, who plays Saru. Mary Wiseman is Sylvia Tilly. Anthony Rapp, Stamets. And Wilson Cruz, who plays Culber. And David Ajala, who is the new upcoming character, Cleveland Booker, who we will call Book. And the moderator was Scott Calura. Did you know Scott? I mean, he seems to be a someone. Okay.
Yeah. Nope. Don't know anything about him.
Okay. Well, I thought he did a very good job asking questions. I have attended many STLV panels, and I thought that Scott did a great job, especially compared to what we see at STLV. Sorry, Creation, but the moderators at STLV need to do better. I thought Scott asked important questions. He didn't run down last year in August. The moderator at STLV, all he did was like run down the storyline points from season two. And I'm like, we've all seen the season. Why are you running down and highlighting the points that we already know? Let's talk about something a little more in depth. Let's talk about the characters and the growth. And oh, I was just so frustrated on that panel at STLV. So kudos to Scott Calura for moderating and doing a great job.
Yeah, well, just running down the story points is safe. That's why they do it sometimes. You can't have answers to questions that people don't want out if you don't ask questions that might lead to answers that people don't want out. So it's a safe thing. What I found interesting about this was not only did they do a good job, but they even sold the fact that they were at Madison Square Garden. Like, said, oh, we're playing the garden, which sounds great, except that when you look at New York Comic Con, it takes place in the Javits Center, which is about a 15-minute walk from the garden. That also shows you how big Comic Con is, because they're using a building 15-minute walk away. Like, when I go to work, I end up going to the garden Penn Station is in the Garden. I go to the Garden, get off the train there, and then I have to walk 15 minutes to the Javits and back every day. So I know just how long this walk is and how much of a nightmare it can be to make the walk. And the fact that they had that many people in the building that would come for a 15-minute walk means, you know, the likelihood is they're diehard Star Trek fans. They're not just moseying into the panel because, oh, well, I got nothing to do and there's a panel going on right there.
Yeah, you'd have to take the time to get there. So definitely. And I thought that the when they turned it over to the Q&A for the audience members, that the audience members did a great job in asking questions. And again, what's wrong with STLV? It was interesting to compare and contrast the two.
We do everything better in New York.
Oh my goodness.
I could take some credit for this. I've worked the event, not this particular one, but I have worked Comic-Con.
So let's just get to some of our takeaways. I'm going to ask you, Pat, what was something or a topic that you want to open with that caught your interest?
There was actually a lot. I'm not usually if I don't see it live, I don't really care about panels. Like, I'm not usually one to go watch these things afterwards or whatever. I don't care. And Star Trek has a bit of a history of spoiling things in their panels, which makes me kind of try and avoid them even more. But let's see, where to start? Starting is hard. So this is probably left better for topic three for us. Okay. But one of the things that I noticed they did heavily, and I think it's because they realized that a lot of fans are killing them over it, is they kind of just kept saying, no, canon is amazing. It's really important to us. No, canon is amazing. It's really important to us. Like, even the moderator pointed out that going into the future will allow them to ignore having to fit into canon. And, like, the first thing out of their mouth is, no, it's really important. And it informs everything that happens in the future. Why are they making such a big deal over this?
Okay. So, yes, I'm glad that you brought that up, because there was a lot of talk about canon, and from, you know, Michelle Paradise, Heather Caden, Alex Kurtzman, even Sonequa got to talk a little bit about it. But I really felt like they were saying, yes, that we honor and we respect canon, that they are not rewriting or changing canon. And I felt like I believe that to be true, especially now that they're jumping 930 years into the future, that there's no canon that could be destroyed. And in part, because I was thinking about this and I went and looked it up, like, okay, 930 years previous to us is going to put us at 1089. Now, when was the last time that any of you talked about, let's see, what was going on, Henry IV? Have you talked about him recently?
Recently? No, but I'm sure they screwed it up in my history class.
Okay. What about King George II?
I did recently. Someone did actually say that name to me. What was the conversation context? Oh, he actually came up in conversation recently, though. He really did.
But really, any effect on our current life?
No, none. Yeah, his name actually did come up in a conversation.
Nice.
Him and King Henry VIII came up.
Interesting. The Byzantine era was going on there. In Asia, they created the first paper money that sort of changed
society.
Yeah, you didn't society have to carry over gold there coins in Asia. Anymore. Yeah. But that's about all that was on Wikipedia that was going on. They have some deaths and births that I don't really care about. I mean, we don't talk about in our daily lives what happened in 1089.
Like, no, we most certainly do not.
So I'm very excited that we get this brand new canon, this brand new story. And so help me if they even bring up anything.
They're going to.
No.
They are. Let me stop you right there.
Our characters will. But the Federation that's there now, or if there is one, they better not talk about it, because when was the last time we talked about anything from 1089? That's my point.
I understand, but they're going to. They didn't make such a big... They literally weaved the word canon into every answer on this panel. And even Heather admitted at one point, like, we kind of screwed the canon thing. We didn't care. But it means a lot. But it means a lot. She actually says it.
No, she did not.
She did. If you listen to her, I forget what question she answers. It is in the second half of the moderator questions.
Yeah.
She goes, well, you know, you didn't really have to know canon to be on the show, but...
Right.
Yeah. Canon, whatever.
No, look, and that was a good point because we have a lot of new people who are joining us with Discovery, right? And so, yeah, you don't have to have the backlog of 50 plus years of Star Trek to join in Discovery. That was her point, which I think is important.
No, her point was trying to prove, and they're all their point, like this is something that was drilled into them before they showed up to do this panel, was, oh, we have to get the naysayers off our back. Just tell them we love canon.
No.
Here's the thing. If you love canon that much and you respect it that much, you don't have to tell me.
Well, yeah, but I think that they, again, to your point, listening to the fans and are trying to answer then that.
They're not doing the right job. Well, that's my point.
To your opinion.
No, yes. Not my opinion. Yes. If you feel the need to tell me you're doing a great job with canon, you're not doing a great job with canon. If you feel the need, if you're the best baseball player in the world, you don't have to tell me it every day. I know it. I see it on the field. If you're doing such a great job with canon, I don't need you to tell me you care about canon. It'll show up in the show.
Wow.
If there's enough people screaming that you're not following canon, then you're probably not following canon enough.
Hmm. I don't know. I think that's your opinion.
Well, is there a large swell of people yelling that they're not following canon?
I don't know if there's a large people. I haven't.
Okay, is there a loud group of people yelling it?
There's always going to be loud people.
But there is, right? So there's a loud group of people yelling it, and they felt the need for some reason to tell us that they care.
Yes, I think...
Okay, then I think they failed. I don't agree with the fact that they didn't do well with canon. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
What I'm saying is if they felt the need that they had to tell us they were, then they at least felt they failed.
I think every cast has felt the need to say that we are honoring and respecting Star Trek. And in that is with canon. Yeah, so I...
This every question. It was a problem. It was every question.
Well, I thought that it was good because they were respecting what has come before, that they are saying that they recognize what comes before and what they're doing. Hopefully, I felt like what they were saying is just trust us.
Yeah, but how many times are we going to just trust you? Stop talking about it. Stop talking about it. Just put it on screen.
Well, they do. And then there's always people who are complaining.
Okay. Then at some point, grow up and ignore them.
Okay. So I did. They did talk a lot about this new world and that they were going, that this future is what we don't expect. I put that down and that there's this new world and that the audience is going to experience the newness of the future with the crew. And so there's this definite newness, this rebirth, this discovery, if you will, they brought that up as well, of this new world and what it is. And that, you know, they were saying that right now there's a lot of disillusionment and disconnection, but how is Trek going to be our best? And that transition from the disillusionment, disconnection to this new, what is it that we are going to be? What are we meant to be? And I thought that was the theme in a lot of their answers as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Growth was the main theme, in my opinion, for their for many of their answers, if not all of their answers, in some way, shape, or form. And it starts off early with Michael even saying, like, she actually enjoyed, and this is a criticism they've gotten from some people I don't agree with, but it has a criticism, that Michael grew from ultra-Vulcan to more human way too quickly, that it just wouldn't happen that way. And she actually... answers that criticism with, well, I like that. I like that you're getting to watch every step of it in rapid succession. Not her words, mine. But I think that from the very beginning of Michael's story and Tilly's story and Stamets' story and Culber's story, we've seen nothing but growth. And we didn't, like, we needed, with Culber, obviously there's huge growth because he changes as a person completely, which he answers in this panel as well, or mentioned, talks about in this panel. But we also see it in someone like Tilly, who doesn't have that drastic of a change. You know what I mean? So, or Michael, who doesn't have nearly the drastic change of dying and coming back to life to change them. And it still happens pretty much as quickly, which, like I said, has been a criticism of some, not one that I necessarily agree with for me. I enjoy the fact that they do it so quickly as well.
Yeah.
I guess the only way that I would want it to elongate is if we had longer seasons. You know what I mean? But I don't want the season arc to change. I would like, and only because I like the way old TV is, to have 24 episodes, you know? So, and that's the only way I would want it to elongate. I wouldn't want the growth we see in season one to be stretched over season one, two, and three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And talking about that, they talked about through with at one time, just this, that it's still going to be a serialized storytelling, which I was like, oh, bummer, but I get...
That's never changing.
I know. It's never going to change. But it did make me think about a little bit of, because it was Heather Caden that answered the question, and she sort of justifies it this way, which I'm not sure that I really buy into, but she says that, you know, you're going to be interested in characters. And she was talking about, I think the question was, you know, how do you combine a space adventure with the drama of getting to know characters? And her opinion was that you're not going to be interested in space adventures and unless you are interested in the characters and what they are going through. And she compared it to TNG. And I thought, well, TNG was very episodic and it was a space adventures and we learned the characters through the space adventures. So, but I thought, and then she said that, you know, it's just a different way to build character development. So they are focusing more on character development where the space adventures are going to come through and that you're going to be invested in the adventure because of the characters. And I think that with that switch, I was like, okay, maybe I can wrap that around my head because I'm still of the TNG. I like the space adventures and therefore I care about the characters. And so I think if I can make that switch, I might be able to enjoy the serialized storytelling nature a little bit more.
Yeah, she was very measured in her statements about this because she said her exact word was differently invested.
Yes.
Because she not more invested, but differently invested. Right. And she really wanted to say more. That's what she wanted to say. But she didn't. But I agree with her. First off, it's not going back because TV is not going back. So forget Star Trek for a second. Just TV in general is serialized more often than not now. And some of the shows that hang around that are not serialized are from when TV wasn't serialized. You know, it's not that they're starting new shows like that. It's just those shows are still hanging on and still have a big following, and they've become more serialized anyway. Like A Criminal Minds, let's say, has become much more serialized, even though it was to some degree serialized in the beginning. It's become much more serialized than it has been before. They also said that they were going to have one-offs, and I just don't buy it.
You know?
Well, we're going to have one-offs that hint to the larger story. All right, they're not a one-off anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be one off because you will still have that thread of the overarching story, especially since they are so limited on the number of episodes. So right. She's trying to play both sides, which I
she's
don't
trying to make
it.
Everyone happy. I find typically when you do that, nobody's happy. So don't do that. Just it's serialized. Okay. If you don't like it, I'm sorry, but that's just the nature of television today. Maybe this TV isn't for you.
Yeah. So they did then talk to each of the actors and started with David Ajala. And I sort of liked his explanation. And he said that him and Burnham have an unorthodox relationship. and thought that was interesting. I want to know more and what's going to make it unorthodox.
Yeah.
When that's first a was weird said, word to use.
It is. He kind of like worked around to it too. He didn't like outright say it at first. He kind of like tried to hint around it and then was just like, it's unorthodox. Like, mm-hmm. So he was like kind of at a loss for words to explain it anyway. And part of that is knowing the whole story and not being able to let certain information out. I mean, Doug Jones had actually said, well, we know more. We just can't tell you at one yes. point during this panel, which was kind of funny. And because now just think about it. Think about you and I, say, doing an interview about something we know the ending of, but only the viewer only knows the very beginning of. So now you have to talk about it without giving away that ending while knowing the ending. It's got to be very hard. And so he seemed to be at a loss for words and used the word unorthodox. And I just wonder if that's really going to fit once we see the story, or if it's just going to be like, he didn't know what to say.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching specifically to see this relationship and see really if it is unorthodox or if he just was at a loss of words.
Right, because honestly, if you want to talk about unorthodox, we've already seen that with Michael and Saru. They went from, like Saru says, or Doug Jones says, he said we went from, you know, competitive to combative, non-trusting to ultimate trust.
Mm-hmm. So brother-sister relationship.
They're picked siblings is what he was trying to explain. They picked each other to be siblings. And he that's very unorthodox. I mean, yeah, do siblings go through many of those stages? Yes, just not in the way we saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other thing I liked that David Ajala said was that we get to see more through his eyes. And I was like, okay, I'm hoping then maybe it won't be so Burnham centric, that if we're actually getting through Booker's eyes, that we're going to get his perspective that's going to be contrasting to what the crew's perspective. Because I think any perspective from our Discovery crew is going to come at it with the same lens. But if we've got Booker looking at it, then that might be a really nice juxtaposition. And I'm hoping that that's true.
I don't know, because he immediately backtracked on that statement and said, oh, well, our eyes.
I know, but that's what I'm hoping for. He but, did say okay. it.
Yeah, I understand. But the full story there is he then backed off that very quickly and said, from their eyes or something, basically saying between the two of them together. And it didn't sound like what you're saying, which would make sense, which is what we all thought they were going to do with this show and the Klingons, by the way, and they didn't really do so well at. But it sounded more like they're in a romantic relationship and we're seeing it from their eyes. That's the way it sounded to me.
Oh, I did not get that one.
Yeah, it sounds like they're together or they're partnered maybe. But either way, it's going to be them together the whole time. So this is not going to play well for the Burnham burnout people here.
Well, I'm hoping it will. That's my desire.
No, well, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's just not the way that came off to me at all.
Mm. Okay, so we took that differently. So what did you think about Culber and his responses? I liked that he said
he was taking the new body out for a ride.
Yeah, that was great.
I mean, it was a great line. It just doesn't really fit what really happened. Like, he wasn't out there dating other people, you know. Like,
well, he was trying to figure out who this new Culber was, you know.
No, I know, but
it was funny. It was lighthearted.
Right. It just doesn't fit what he actually did. What I loved about it is that it's admitting that we are going back to season one, them at some point, that their relationship is not going to be the way it was in season two, in season three. At some point, they're going to be back to what we all wanted to see in the first place. And he, without saying that flat out, he's basically admitting, oh, look, I was dead and then alive and I was confused and now, so we'll fix that. Like, it's basically how I took that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that will really further their relationship. And I liked how he didn't address the fact that he was going to, you know, be full back into Dr. Culber. He said, how can Culber be of service? And so how is he going to, you know, contribute to this story? And I found that interesting phrase that he used that as well.
Yeah, he's very good at these interviews. He's very good at throwing out lines that can be taken many different ways and that you have to kind of see what happens to understand what he said. And I think we're going to do that, which is good. But like I said, I think the one theme is that Stamets and Culber are going to just be Stamets and Culber again at some point early. A bigger point that I caught, not from Stamets, was that Alex Kutzman said, we have no plans of bringing Discovery back to the 23rd century.
Yep. I wrote that down as well, because that was one of the questions from the audience. And I thought, wow. He says, we have no plans for Discovery to return to the 23rd century. And I thought,
but apparently they have like 40 other shows in the works. So who knows? But Discovery, which I thought was coming back at some point during season 3, well, unless they're lying to us, flat out lying to us, there is no plans for it to end up back in the 23rd century. Now, while I know he said that now, so I believe that they will not be there in the third season, I believe that this move was made to quiet the canon police in the first place. I don't think this was ever the plan to be 930 years in the future. So if enough people scream and yell they hate the future, I could see them coming back.
Well, and it's always in the back of my mind, like Michelle Yeoh is there. So it may be that the ship Discovery, but somehow Michelle Yeoh will come back. I don't know.
Well, now we're back to the do you really respect canon thing, right?
Well, Michelle Yeoh that's not canon that she's going to be on Discovery or Section 31. They can change their mind with the announcements. So it's not canon until it's on screen.
Yet. But yeah. If they show one episode of her there, now they have to find a way to bring her back.
Yeah. But they haven't.
However, we don't get to yell and scream until Discovery is over anyway, because she can come back at any moment back into the timeline anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's not like we can't get the whole season with her. And then somewhere in season 4 or 5, she jumps back far enough to be in the first episode of Section 31.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why time travel gets tricky. I guess they could end the show with her and we just have to believe it happened after the fact. But it makes it much harder.
Yeah.
If you don't ever show her going back.
Exactly. Yeah. So on to your favorite character, Tilly. And I thought Mary Wiseman was very eloquent in what she had to say about Tilly. She talked about how that it's a time of growth and not a time for her to wilt. And she's going to step up. And the moderator, Scott Kalara, said, you know, that you are just an ensign and you're out, you know, doing all these things sort of above your pay grade. And then she laughingly said, yeah, they should pay me more. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, that was funny.
But she talked about that her character has a lot of empath and lightheartedness, but also aptitude and strength, which I really felt is true, and that how people are drawn to her and how she is drawn to others for that exact reason. So I'm hoping that by what she says that, you know, it won't just be the comic relief, that she is going to, you know, we know she's very smart, intelligent, has the aptitude, and is going to show her strength a little bit more in season 3.
Yeah, her statements absolutely give me hope that we'll get the Tilly that I like and not the comic relief Tilly. However, my trust tells me that they're just going to screw it up. That they're going to send her in a path like, yeah. Oh, and then she just drops an F-bomb for no reason. I don't trust them. Not with Tilly.
Okay. But she was very eloquent. And
Mary Wiseman is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, if I like the character of Tilly, she plays it perfectly. Mm-hmm. I just don't like the character.
The way they're writing.
They write for her, you know. Yeah. So I have no problem with Mary Wiseman at all. And I think every time I've ever seen her speak, she's been great. I just don't trust that they're not going to screw it up.
Another comment by Anthony rap about Stamets, which I just felt totally encapsulated.
Wait, is this the giving comment?
No.
Oh, okay. I'll do the next one. Okay. Go ahead.
So when he is describing his relationships, Stamets, he says, you know, because we know Stamets comes off very cold and, you know, harsh, but he says Stamets is very loyal, but you have to be measured up.
Yeah, this is the giving comment. He says he's the most giving character.
No, but you have to measure up to it. He's not just going to give it to you. It's you have to measure up and sort of go through this test of his, say, okay, you do live up, so I am going to be loyal. And I thought that describes Stamets perfectly.
It does. And between season one and two, you really see that as true. So, this was the one I wanted to talk about. So, it starts with with Scott saying that Stamets is the most giving character. And when he first said it, I think to myself, are we watching the same Discovery? Like, this is... He's the biggest jerk on the ship for most of the show. And but as Anthony Rapp goes into explaining it, he is the most giving, but you have to earn that giving. Like, he's not just going to give to people. He gives to Tilly because she's brilliant. He gives to Culber because he's a loving, caring person. Like, these things are happening simply because they're deemed worthy by Stamets of his time. And in reality, of all the things that humans have to give in general, right? The one thing we have that's the most valuable to give people is our time. Yeah, I can give you money. I can give you this. I can give you that. But if I don't give you any time, what good is it? Like, just go ask a kid. They don't care about the big toy. They care about sitting down and watching a movie with mommy and daddy. And so Stamets is saying, or Anthony Rapp is saying about Stamets, that in order to get that, you would need to be worthy of his time in general. And he also says that he's learned to be a little more like that in his own life and not just give so much, but make people, you know, earn it, so to speak. Now, on a TV show, it works great that you don't give anyone who doesn't earn it time. However, in reality, we know that typically if you're a good person, you give people time till they prove you wrong the other way around. I like Stamets' way of doing things better. I like, you don't get it until I deem you worthy. And I'm probably more like that than I'd like to admit on this podcast, but I am. And, but once you're my friend, I'll go to the ends of the earth for you on anything, but I just don't become friends with just anybody. And, that's somewhat by design. Now, what I really enjoyed about it was it really showed why he was such a jerk in season one and not in season two, because he had absolutely no respect for Lorca.
Right. That's what I was going to bring up.
You know, and Starfleet in general, but he's coming more over for Starfleet with working with people like Tilly and Wilson Cruz and or Culber and Michael. That's helping him come over more. Not that Starfleet's going to be gone next season anyway, but he hated Starfleet. Then he gets a captain like Lorca, so it reinforces the fact that you should hate Starfleet. And now we've watched that swing 180 degrees.
Yeah, exactly right. And when you think about the reasons that, you know, Culber decides to inject himself with the, you know, tardigrade DNA and to make these jumps, it's like he had Stamets. A passion for, obviously, his science and wanted to make that last jump because of the crew, not in any way, shape, or form because of Lorca.
You know? Lorca even said if he can, the way he talked, you could tell he just manipulated him with, well, you're going to save all their lives.
Like, yeah.
To heck with me, but it's them.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked how also Mary Wiseman, because the question was asked, you know, well, you are now 930 years in the future. How is homesickness going to be playing a part? And Mary Wiseman took the question because they were saying, well, Tilly's the most homesick out of them all. And she was like, you know, it's going to show, which I think is a very important process that they don't skip, is that, yeah, we are going to have this time to process the loss and that we're going to process it differently. So I think that there's going to have that embedded with the storyline, that it's not something new, but that we are regretting and feeling that loss of what we have lost all of the family and everything from the past.
Yeah, but she also sticks in there that Discovery is home. So they've all made the decision to go because if they would have left, they'd still be homesick.
Right. That Discovery now is their family even more so. I mean, they make that choice because Discovery is a family, but now it literally is.
Becomes their only family.
Yeah.
Yeah. To tie into that, though, too, they weren't in part of this, the same question, but Michael is answering a question, and she talks about how she followed after Saru, who said, he was asked who was going to be captain, him or Michael, and they're like, oh, we have to discuss that. They don't even know. This is the when he actually says, well, we know more, but we can't tell you. And he's saying, you know, we don't even know if the people there would accept us, one of us, me as captain or her as captain or neither of us as captain.
Yeah.
She goes, she wants to add on to that. And she talks about how this, the jump changes all of these things and that duty is a binding force in and of itself. So their call to duty just to do the job has actually binded them into more of that family. And it sounds like it's a directly related to what Tilly is saying, but they're not even asked at the same time, these two questions.
Yeah, right. And I wrote that too. Yeah, that duty binds us and that we're going to get this identity of who we are as an individual and this identity of who we are as a crew.
Right, right. We're going to actually watch their identity of self and identity of, they said group, but really community or society, because they'd be their own little mini society. We're going to see that form much more in this season, I think, than we have even in the past seasons, which has been a lot. But a lot of the past seasons was being confused of identity. I think we're going to get a lot more answers, maybe a little earlier, and then watch the answer evolve. To the average listener, that might not sound, it might not sound like I'm saying the same thing or I'm confusing myself, but I'm not. So, like, Colbert didn't know who he was, period. He was trying to form that. Whereas now I think they're going to know who they are in the beginning. And we're going to watch that change and metamorphosize into something else. And little by little, in very rapid succession, because we only get X amount of episodes, we're going to see them change into who they become at the end. But it's not like they were ever lost in their own thoughts at any point about who they were, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I agree completely. Yeah. One other question that I found interesting was, one of the audience members asked if they are going to look for an opportunity to honor, Aaron Eisenberg and sort of have mention of Captain Nog. I think it's a nice question, but again, it sort of goes back that, no, it's, we don't talk about things 1,000 years ago. Like,
it's going to happen. It's going to.
What, you think that they are going to?
I do.
With Aaron Eisenberg specifically?
I think so. Yep.
And how do you feel about that?
I don't care. Okay. I mean, I don't care. I think it's a very nice gesture. I think it's whatever. I don't think it's necessary. If we, the fans, want to believe it, then who cares what it says on TV? And if they don't give it to us and you want to believe it, then believe it. They didn't say he's never been a captain, right? So whatever. I think if done well, it could be a great little nod to him. And it would have to be done they'd have to be referencing some kind of battle and his name would just have to kind of slip in. Like, that's, in my opinion, how it would have to be. Or they would be talking about, oh, well, this is like what we learned. But the problem is it would happen after them. So they can't just be talking about it in a historical context. Someone would have to be talking about something that changed something and his name would just have to slip. You could not make it a big point that you're saying his name, is my point.
Right.
It has to just be like, you and I are having a conversation. I don't know. The conversation weaves and winds and talks about divorce. And one of us would go, oh, well, King Henry VIII just killed all his wives. Like, you're not really talking about King Henry VIII.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Exactly.
Yep.
But the name gets out there that, oh, he was a king and his name was Henry VIII. You know, mm-hmm. Like, so it would have to be in that way in order for it to be done right, in my opinion.
Me. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nice thought, but I'm fine if they don't, because, you know, to me, in my heart, we honor Aaron Eisenberg. So
yeah, and I mean, not to sound, you know, like I don't care, but if everyone who ever was important or remotely important to Star Trek all of a sudden had to be getting mentioned in episodes as captain, We'd have to create an episode where someone just read the names of captains. Like, they would just have to go through a list and be like, oh, it was this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy and this woman, this woman, this woman, this woman, this guy and this woman, this guy, this woman. And it, I mean, so there's been a lot of people. So a lot of people die that had something to do with the show.
Yeah, I agree.
I definitely believe we're going to find out more about Calypso.
Oh, yes. So an audience member asked, was like, well, are we going to find out how Calypso tied in? And then what did they even answer? Like, you'll have to wait and see.
They just said maybe.
Yeah.
One word, maybe.
Yep.
So now they gave themselves an out, but they're going to annoy a lot of the fans. If there's nothing about Calypso in here and he knew that and still said maybe, there's a problem. Now, it may turn out that nothing about Calypso is real. Okay, because them going into the future changes all that. However, it could be referenced that whatever events are taking place were taking place in place of Calypso. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's how that maybe could be formed with it not really happening. But if something doesn't happen where you're immediately like, oh, that's why Calypso doesn't happen, or oh, that's why Calypso happens, there's going to be a lot of fans who are like, why'd you say maybe? You should have just said no.
Yeah. Yeah, so I loved Calypso, so that maybe annoyed me as well. I'm like, no, we need to, for me, I want it tied in.
Well, they didn't say no.
Yeah, I know. They said they nothing, said maybe. Listeners, no, which annoyed me.
They said maybe.
So let's move on to what annoyed me.
See, now the two things that annoyed you, go ahead. It didn't bother me at all.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So when they were bringing in all the panels, they had Beastie Boys Sabotage music. Okay. That is from the Kelvin timelines. And then when on the outro, they had the Star Trek 09 Giacchino, again, from the Kelvin timeline. I'm like, why are you doing this? Why can we not use Jeff Russo Discovery music? I'm sure CBS owns it. What's going on? Why are they using Kelvin timeline music to introduce my Discovery panel? It annoyed me.
It doesn't annoy me at all.
Did you notice?
I noticed Beastie Boys because I like the song. I didn't even listen far enough to get to the outro. They said, well, we have another panel coming up, and I turned it off. Like, what was that?
No, but why did they do that? Why didn't they use Discovery music?
I don't know. Music doesn't matter that much to
me. Well, don't let Brandon hear you say that.
Well, why do you think Warp 5's over? It doesn't. It does, especially not for a panel. What do I care what they do on a panel? Plus, Sabotage seems perfect to me anyway because, you know, they got all the people screaming and yelling about canon and they're going to talk about it in every single one of their questions.
Well, and then I was thinking, okay, so they've had this division of Paramount and CBS. Why are they using Paramount music for a CBS thing? And I thought, well, maybe because of the merger that it was okay. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think that CBS has that much to do with the panel. That's why. Hmm. New York Comic Con has the panel. They play the music. So it's not a CBS issue at that point.
Okay.
It's New York Comic Con who is... I forget what company.
But well, so Creation is, STLV is more CBS controlled. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think that just whoever decided, let's do a panel on this and let's play these two songs. I don't think CBS is really making that decision. Oh, well, it's your opinion.
Yes, it is. And I'm calling them out. Don't do it again.
Sabotage is fine. It fits. I mean, we're just going to talk about canon in every class. I'm amazed they didn't find a way to say, oh, is there Calypso? And the guy went, maybe. It's canon, right? Like, I mean, I couldn't believe that word didn't come out of his mouth for that question.
Oh, gosh.
It was the only question without canon tied in. They even talked about two buttholes and found a way to make that canon.
Oh, my gosh. They made it canon. I didn't even know what that was about. Who was that person?
That was apparently from the Comic-Con the year earlier, or maybe it was from... It must have been from a year earlier, Comic-Con. Because it wasn't at the 50th, because that was before the show aired. But I don't even know what it's referring to, but I do know that somehow we were talking about buttholes and canon. Like, this is how bad it has gotten with this canon thing.
That was the one question from the audience, and I was like, oh, dear.
Well, that she went on to ask something else. She was just saying that she was famous for that
from
the year earlier, and she never got confirmation. But then they confirmed it for her. I mean, so whatever.
Did you have any other annoying things? Because to me,
no, it was just the canon thing.
Okay, all right.
It's just that I don't care enough. I mean, yes, I want you to like get close and try your best. And if staying within canon completely destroys the story, well then, bye-bye. Sorry, canon. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time the show has ever done this. You write enough TV, eventually you screw up your own storylines. It's just the way it works. It's just what happens. And for everybody crying, and this is, see, here's the thing. If you don't like this show for those reasons, let me give you a bit of advice. Stop watching. Just stop watching. If they can't do it right, then just don't bother. Why are you frustrating yourself and me by hating on a show and continuing to watch it? Why? Why do we have to do this? Life is way too short for this nonsense. I hated The Walking Dead and everybody else loves it. You know what I did? I stopped watching it. I didn't cry to the people who love it that they shouldn't and why they shouldn't. I just stopped watching and I put on another channel. There's 1,000 of them on my TV. If there's got to be something I like better than this. And if there isn't, I have a computer. I mean, I just don't understand why the writers feel the need to answer people who are never going to like it anyway. We see this, and it's not a Star Trek exclusive. This is something that happens over all fandoms, that they decide they're going to hate something and they're going to spend their life hating it, no matter what it does. So let's just give up on this idea of making everybody happy. It's not going to happen, because I can promise you right now that the moment you start changing your show to curtail to the people who aren't going to like it anyway, I'm not going to like it. So now what are you going to do to fix it for me?
And that is the strongest message you can send, is to stop watching if they start losing viewers.
Oh, you can't believe how many people don't understand that.
Right.
I mean, so this is not Star Trek, but wrestling fans are every bit as bad, if not worse, than Star Trek fans. There is nothing the WWE can do right now to make anybody like it. And I don't care what they do. Everyone hates the top guy. They want another top guy, right? Let's make Seth the top guy. Until they make Seth the top guy, then they hate Seth. And so just stop watching. If you all stop watching, they'll do something different. I promise you, because you're going to watch the advertising money disappear. And that's the one thing that matters. But they don't. They'd rather watch and hate it. I'll tell you guys, by the way, too, the writers and the directors and everyone else, they may have said canon 9 million times because they kind of care whether you like the show or not, but they only like it so they can keep going to the bank. It's the only reason why they care if you like it. So even if you keep watching and hating it, they're still laughing their way to the bank with a check.
Yeah, it's a business, and we need to remember that.
Of course it is. And I'm fine with that. Just, you know what? Keep watching it, because then it stays on for me. Just stop typing about it on Facebook. Let's do it that way.
Oh, to live in a perfect world.
That's why I'm not on Facebook anymore. Like, ever. I can't put up with all the fans of every... It's not just Star Trek. All the fandoms. You know, you join these groups to talk about something you care about and love, and then everyone uses that "I care about it" to hate on it. It's just so unbelievably frustrating. That it's like, okay, if you have a legit criticism about one thing here or one thing there, or maybe they would have done this, or on a match I would have booked this way, but this was okay too. That's one thing. But to just constantly see the same people complaining and complaining and complaining about an outcome of something, and then when they get the outcome that they were complaining they wanted 2 months ago, they complain about it too, you're like, this guy's just going to not like it no matter what. Just stop trying. You can't please everybody. You can't. You can't. I promise you, there's far too many people watching Star Trek for you to please them all. And the loud minority is just that. They're still a minority. They're not the majority of fans, because if they were, you wouldn't have ratings enough to be in season 3.
Right. Very true. So after listening to this panel and watching it a couple of times while taking down the notes, and having this discussion with you, Pat, I feel that I am choosing to have, compared to you, a greater hope for what we're going to see in season 3.
No, that's not a fair representation.
Yeah, because that Tilly is going to be more adept, and
I have a great hope for the season. Tilly's the only one I don't.
Oh, okay.
For. All or right. I hope. I just don't trust. There's a difference.
And I hope that they are going to not have so much Burnham-centric. I don't want Burnham burnout again for this season. So I'm hoping that we're going to get it from different perspectives. I'm hoping with this panel that we're going to have more about the characters and the crew as a whole. And again, not just Michael Burnham's story, but get all the stories more equal time through this. And I am looking forward to seeing how they take the political stance with what is the Federation? Is there a Federation? How are we in 930 years? You know, how are we acting as a society, as a community? So I feel like this panel has given me a lot of hope, and I am putting a lot of faith in the writers that they will, you know, live up to what I have and that what I'm seeing with the new trailer and with this panel.
Okay. No. So I think you mischaracterized me there. I have great hope for the season. I think it's going to be a great season. I think going into the future, although reactionary, will work out. Just because someone's reactionary, and I know, I understand people think that if you say reactionary, you mean bad, but that's not true at all. They're listening to the fans and they're doing what they believe the fans want. And if that's true, then it'll work and it'll be a great show. I don't know if they're listening to the right fans, but that's another story. It doesn't mean they can't write a good show. And I have no hope for Tilly's character. I just don't. They're going to write her horribly. I do not have Michael Burnham burnout. I don't care that we see Burnham all the time. So I don't care if we see more of her or less of her. Have it your way. It doesn't make a difference to me. I think they'll write that in a way that it'll be good either way. I'm looking forward to Book, to see who Book is, what Book's about. I am also looking forward to seeing the dynamic of Saru and Michael changing, because they're so much closer now that it has to evolve again. If it doesn't, they're missing out on a huge part of the story, in my opinion. Stamets and Cobra, I'm really looking forward to that coming back together. And most importantly, I'm looking forward to see what from the Federation survives 930 years from now and what doesn't, and what they bring back to 930 years from now that maybe that society takes from them. Because, like you said, we don't talk about things that happened 930 years ago. However, the things that happened 930 years ago heavily influence society today, whether we know it or not, in some way, shape, or form. Democracies and such were created long before America existed. So these things have influenced how our society is run. So I'd like to see what comparisons are made then. And something we didn't talk about it before, and I kind of wanted to. One of the statements they made that is very encouraging to me is that they said flat out, we are going to use today's problems in the future. We are putting them on the screen. And one of the things about the first two seasons is I felt like they kind of halfway did that. They kind of seemed like they wanted to, but they didn't want to piss people off to not watch. So they kind of had like one foot in the water, one out. And it feels like they're going to jump in this time and just lay the problems out on the floor. And Wilson Cruz even said, we know what's right. We know what's wrong. We just have to stand up for it. Now, those were two different questions, because one was just talking about social justice in general. And the other one was talking about what they're going to do in the future. But I want to see those problems, our problems, in this show. That's what Star Trek has always been. And anyone who says it isn't is lying to you. So,
yeah, I'm really looking forward to that socio and the economic future and how society is and how we interact. And, you know, are we back to kingdoms? Is democracy alive? Like, how are we interacting as a people? I'm very excited to see that.
And I also want to see what of that society does Discovery adapt, or vice versa. Because we've always kind of seen that the Starfleet runs around spreading its version of a utopia, right? And people take parts of that, but we don't typically see it work the other way. And a true utopia works both ways. Now, the argument can be made that we've already done the taking from other societies and that we're not in that stage. But if you stop at any point, then you stop become... You never get to the point where they're trying to say we got to, is my point. So, and now that you're on your own, like, we saw that actually very well in Voyager, taking parts of other cultures because they were stuck on their own. And we're in that same situation. They're stuck on their own in this season. So they're going to have to adapt more. And I think it can be done really well. I just don't necessarily agree with the Tilly thing.
I love that you made that comparison about Voyager, where Voyager is on their own because of the displacement in space. And now we have Discovery on their own because of the displacement of time. Wow. I love that. It's been fun talking about the New York Comic Con Discovery panel today, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I bought it when it first came out. I played it for like 2 or 3 days and I went, what is going on? Am I missing something? Is just, I'm not a good player. So, and then I checked on the reviews online and everyone agreed that it was not a good game. And we were all correct.
Literary Treks.
But that's why I bring this back around, why it was so cool, the Klingon battlecruisers, to distinguish them not being the smooth-sided, cheapy little things from the series. Gene gives them this, you know, never is this uttered on screen, but every little tech nerd knows what a Katinga, you know, Klingon battlecruiser is. And it's only because Gene came up with that word and gave it to them in the novel. It's not in the movie. You know, nobody says, Captain, we're right. Picking up three Klingon Takinga heavy battlecruisers on the, you know, Epsilon 9.
Earl Grey.
Come on. Like, when you go on a date, you're going out to dinner and you're, that's like the standard date number one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, maybe things are different in the 24th
maybe.
Century.
Maybe.
But okay, all right.
I mean, you could be assuming this is the first time they shared breakfast together.
Maybe. That's a wild assumption.
Maybe right.
And introducing our newest show, The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Mike, I wanted to make a comment about something that you said about being mostly the middle for a lot of these comic book franchises. It actually makes me think Star Trek, in a way, is something that keeps going and going, 764 installments now, without a specific end necessarily. Maybe it'll come someday. But
These are the Voyages was a love letter to the fans. What are you talking about, Justin?
You know what I mean.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the edge. That'll come right to Amy. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Amy, where can people find you when you're not trying to look 930 years into the past to see what's been going on and if we still talk about it?
Yes, I have been doing that recently, and we don't talk about it. So you can find me here on the network. I co-host Earl Grey with my good friends Justin Ozer and Joe Keegan, and we talk about the next generation. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson and right there in the Babel Conference. So, Pat, where can people reach you when you're living in New York City and not attending the New York Comic Con panel?
Probably my house. But other than that, they can find me popping in and out of the Babel Conference from time to time. It's been less lately than I'd like, but I just haven't been on Facebook much, as I mentioned earlier. You can also find me over with my good friend Chris Tribuzio on the UFP Network, where we host Mickey's Marvels, which is deep dives into Disney movies. We will also, as we record this today on Veterans Day, tomorrow, so a while ago now, the Disney Plus app will go live. And with that, the first episode of Mandalorian will come out, and Friday the second one will come out, and we will be doing that, covering that weekly, as just as we did Discovery here. We'll be doing Mandalorian weekly there with a surprise guest, probably. So hopefully that works out, and we'll have a lot of fun with that. Other than that, there's a new project in the works. And,
there is.
You may not be hearing me so much here anymore. So,
yeah, listeners, you might be wanting to pay attention the next couple of episodes that are coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's about the only places to find me. You can find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5. It's no spaces. The 5 is a digit. And I'm also actually live streaming on Twitch with MagicDrop5 is the name also. If you want to check me out there, I play Diablo 3, World of Warcraft, Age of Empires, Warcraft 3, a couple other games that I do. But I always interact with the viewers. So if you're in there typing, Chris is actually in there every time I'm playing. We're usually BSing. So if you want to check me out there, I have conversations while I die often in video games.
Sounds interesting. Well, if you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to thank our amazing panelists, our associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millett, Chris Tribuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Edge in particular.
Well, thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on the edge of Federation space.